Okay, and now we need to open our workshop that we have scheduled tonight. And so we will go ahead and call that workshop to order. And I guess when you're ready, Irene, if you want to call the roll for that also, just so we have a record.
Okay, Mr. Henderson?
Here.
Mr. Beebe?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Cuff?
Here.
Mr. Davis?
Here.
And Mr. Nice?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. And the workshop item tonight is the proposed land development code amendment updating the standards for drinking establishments and fences. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Cuff.
Before we start, just real quick, Irene, just for the record, we have two board members with excused absence that aren't here. And that would be Ms. Lucas and Ms. Dalton.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if everyone met Mr. Hoover, Bill. I think he came to the last meeting, if you weren't here. Bill is one of our newest senior planners for the city of Palm Coast. Bill comes from, is certified AICP, is a certified planner for many, many years. Bill, half of his life, worked for the private sector, mainly consulting, and did a lot of code work. And we are glad that Mr. Hoover came on board, because if y'all remember, 6 months ago or so, I talked about future code changes, and this board's going to see a lot of action in the near future when it comes to land development code changes, because it's been since 2008, and we are starting to look at all of our chapters to bring forward for some changes. And this particular code change actually was initiated by our city council for fences, walls, and drinking establishments. Basically what happened is, and Bill will get into it a little bit, but just a little bit of background, specifically for fences, city council was getting a lot of letters, I don't know a lot, but getting correspondence from citizens, specifically citizens who live on the saltwater canals, okay? Because if you remember when we did our code in 2008, when we did fences, we really tried to harmonize the Palm Coast Community Service Corporation District kind of covenants and restrictions into our land development code. The citizens were complaining when it came to fences on saltwater canals. The old Palm Coast Community Service Corporation district would require the fences to step down. So your neighbors, if you're there, you would still, you're sitting on your porch and still have that vista and that view. Our land development code, current land development code, doesn't require that. Our land development code does not require a step down on saltwater canals. So that, along with some drinking establishments, when we were talking about, there was some concerns by our city council, wanted staff to look at our regulation when it comes to standalone bars, when it comes to the bottle clubs and those type issues. So we did that. We actually passed an ordinance with city council, because it's in the code of ordinance with the hours of operation for bottle clubs. Just a clarification. But we took the opportunity to go back to city council on two workshops to talk about fence walls and drinking establishments. And they gave us some direction. They had, I will tell you, when it came to fences and walls, or fences and to step down on salt waters or not to step down, there was somewhat of a debate, but the consensus was from our city council was to step down. Bill will get into that. And then we had the opportunity to look at the code again when you were coming to planning board, so we took that opportunity to look at our whole, what's given us some issues with fences and walls and those type of things, and kind of bring that back to y'all. So we do have, Bill will touch on what council had consensus with and what they did. I can tell you, fences in the front yard, there was a discussion on that, and I got the feeling that, you know, city council really wasn't in favor of fences in the front yard. But your recommendation to them, I think, would be helpful or not. But with that said, I'm a little long-winded. But Bill got some good pictures. We can go over kind of with his presentation of kind of what we're looking at as far as the code. Also in your packet, we went ahead and did a hard version of the code, a strikeout underline. Council didn't see that. You know, that's our job to come back and to, you know, make those revisions in the code. Basically, council, you know, we just did some visuals and an item list, what they had a consistency on or not, and then we come back to y'all to kind of finalize your recommendation, and then we would bring that back to city council or bring that back for y'all for your decision after the workshop, and then bring it back to the city council. But Bill, go ahead.
Just 1 second before you go, Bill. I just have a question. We're not passing anything tonight, right?
No, it's just a workshop.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's just, we're going to get input from you guys, we're going to discuss it.
Yeah.
So you're going to get some input from us, and then at some point in the future, we're going to make a recommendation.
Yeah.
To the city council. Is that right?
Yes, and that's what we're hoping for the third.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The third, and depending on how it goes tonight, we'll go back. We'll have time to advertise. We'll have time to make your recommendations,
okay,
drafts and tweets and whatever guidance you give us, direction. Then we'll go ahead and back and make the changes. And whatever y'all recommend to city council, we will make that recommendation to them. Bring your draft to them.
Good. I understand that. Thank you. Sorry, Bill.
excuse me. And feel welcome to, if you got a question as I go through, if, I don't mind the interruption of the process. You know, my hope is that we work out most of the stuff tonight, so it's more just some fine-tuning on June 3rd. So if it takes half hour to go through the presentation on the walls, we'll do that first, and then we'll switch over to the drinking establishments, which will probably only maybe take half the time of the walls. After January 13th meeting, City Council requested the planning staff to review our fencing and wall standards, and they also asked us to look at the standards for drinking establishments. And the focus primarily would be that we would look at how we were addressing fences in the back of single-family homes along saltwater canals. We reviewed the standards in our code, plus I also looked at 10 other communities that were a little bit similar to Palm Coast, and we took this information back to the City Council on March 10th and again on March 31st. The first thing we looked at was what the standards were back even before Ray got here. And basically along the saltwater canals, the black chain link fences were the preferred type of fencing material. Maximum fence height was 6 feet. If you wanted to do a fence that was over 3 feet high or a wall, then it needed review by the Architectural Review Committee. And the only way you could get a fence in your front yard was through a variance. Then I'm going to go through here right now of what the Land Development Code has right now. So the only way you get a fence in the front yard in single family and two family in our single family districts is that it would have to be in a neo-traditional type setting. And the maximum height any place in that district is 6 feet. You can put up a black metal fence or a bronze, but only if your screen room is bronze. And you can see by the pictures that if you open fences are what's typically most common along the saltwater canals. This is a standard here that we have a lot of problems with in complaints. Along rear property lines where it backs up to a right-of-way, a canal, or a golf course, you're required to set your fence back 3 feet and then put plantings on the outside of the fence.
Planting on the outside of the fence,
is that mandatory? That's mandatory. And the problem is on planting, and Ray's heard it more than I have, when they plant and you got an interior lot, you're planting against the right-of-way, there's not a way for the people to get out there and maintain the plantings. So the plantings tend to just be planted. If they make it, fine. If they don't make it, then they're not trimmed and maintained. The next one, you're also required to have plantings if you have you see it on the drawing there, if you've got a fence that goes from the side of your house out to the side property line, so where it's running, the fence is running parallel to the street, then you need to have plantings on the street side. And the city council made the following recommendations and asked us to prepare an ordinance after the March 31st hearing. And their initial suggestions were to allow white aluminum fences and bronze metal fences. And on vinyl fences, which is a little bit more of a newer material, as long as it meets our wall standard colors, it would be allowed, or if it was any type of simulated wood stain, because if you got a wood fence, you'd be allowed to stain it or paint it. So essentially treating the vinyl fences like a wood fence. And initially, the city council's maybe 50-50 on allowing some short open fences. Initially, we were moderately for it, but after we did more research, and I'll show you a little bit later, we found another way to allow the fences, and we think that's will take care of when the people really want a fence in their front yard. And along the saltwater canals, city council suggested the fences go from 6 feet down to 4 feet. Within 20 feet of the canal or intercoastal, or the fence be open. And we did draft the definition of a fence. With an open fence, has to be at least 50% visibility through it.
I think if I could just elaborate a little bit, that one with the open fences, there was a lot of discussion on, if someone's private property should be able to have a fence of what they want, to not have to step down. So what we tried to do, and city council had a consensus on this when we went back to the second workshop, was trying to meet that compromise. It's not where you have to have it all open. What we proposed was just to require within that first 20 feet of saltwater canal. That means if someone wanted some privacy, they could still have that higher fence, have that prior privacy, but when you get closer to the canal, you would have to step down so you can see. So we thought that was a compromise, and I think city council agreed with that one.
And city council also said that they wanted to quit requiring fences to be set back 3 feet from golf courses, canals, and right-of-ways, and having a planting area. And then in the side yards, the requiring shrubs, that would be discontinued.
Could I elaborate on that one too, Bill? I'm sorry. And I think you did when I was using the restroom. But this one requiring the shrubs, especially like in the back, it wasn't working for us. I can tell you, having that 3 feet and then having those shrubs, so now, you know, it's out of sight, out of mind. You know, it's behind your fence, and it might be along a roadway network or something like that. And, you know, our experience is a lot of these things are dying. They're not being kept up. You know, it's out of sight, out of mind. Number one, you know, maintaining it is a hassle. Now you got to get a gate on your back. You got to, you know, maintain that. And we felt, so did City Council, that let's stop requiring. I mean, we require landscapes in house. If someone wants to put their own bushes where they, we're not saying you don't, you can, you know, but we're saying if you want some landscape along your fence, go for it. You know, but we're not going to require it. So.
And this is a little bit of newer type material. I've seen it used a lot when I previously worked down in Southwest Florida, precast concrete fences. And the nice thing on that, if you're like mowing, you hit a rock, the concrete is stained clear through, so you don't have the unsightly mark. And these things come from what the ones I've been experienced with, a 50-year guarantee, so it's a very low maintenance fence.
50-year guarantee.
Pressure treated, you know, every year or so if you want to. And this was planning staff's suggestion on how we would allow fences in front yards. So it's obviously a compromise, and we wanted to clarify a little bit, because on the right-hand picture there, people do plant, lay stones up and create a mini retaining wall and put plants inside. And sometimes they'll put a short piece of fencing material. So we came up with a definition on those two items. And essentially, on a fence, if it's less than 20 feet long and it's done with landscaping where it's not enclosing anything or restricting access, then it would not be considered a fence. It would be considered a landscape feature.
And that would be the one on the left, Bill, right?
That would be the one on the left. And on a wall, I'm guessing this wall is maybe 15 inches high, let's say. But we set on a wall, and this is open for how high you might think it should be. We started at, if the wall's 2 feet or less, and where it's just being used with landscaping and it's not restricting access and stuff, then it would be considered a landscape feature, and we would allow it, and it would not be considered a wall. So you wouldn't need a permit or anything for either of those.
Yeah, let me just elaborate too. I mean, we, our code, this item, you know, there's two items. To allow fences, and hope the next slide, I think, will show what council, but go back one, I'm sorry, where you were. Like the fence, the neighbor's fence, what we proposed for City Council was a fence that would just go down your property line, and that's it. But like I said, I think council was kind of on having fences in the front yard. But we, you know, our code allows for landscape fencing, landscape features like this. We don't prohibit that now. What we're trying to do, because we had some, it's not real clear, you know, it's confusion, you know, fence, and so, you know, Bill working on some of the definitions, we just want to make it a little bit clearer. Look, you can have your fencing, it's landscape features. We're allowing you to have landscape features. We just want to make that clear in the code. You know, our presentation, our recommendation is, you know, just make it clear in the code that you can have some of these landscape features, and then when does it not become a landscape feature, I guess?
And this drawing shows some of the things we were talking about. One thing, starting on the left side there, and would be the top item that's sort of the bright yellow, 5-foot utility easement. When we discussed having an open fence along the side front in the front yard along the side property lines, the Public Works Department said they, when they clean out swales with one of those grade awls, they wanted the fence back outside the utilities, but so that the city didn't end up buying fences when they missed coming down with the bucket occasion. So that was the reason for that. And then the we're showing where the sidewalk is there. There's a couple 8-foot long fence sections that might be like a split rail type fence, and those could be up to 4 feet high. So as long as you got the landscaping with it and it's less than 20 feet long total, in that case, there's an example of where that would be allowed. Now the 4-foot open fences, those are coming up and then they were turning, like, I guess you could say maybe 4 feet in this instance to the inside. And so that's still open for discussion, and that's, the city council would welcome your input on that one especially. The in the light green area out by the saltwater canal, you can see the 20-foot area there. And when I sketched this out, I could see a problem coming up, and that's with the pool. So when people put in a pool, they tend to like to have their privacy. So in this case, your pool is supposed to be set back 7.5 feet from the site property lines. So you can see, in this case, it's 12 feet. But if the pool intrudes, in this case, 4 feet into the 20-foot area closest to the saltwater canal. So as proposed in our ordinance, we're allowing a fence up to 6 feet high, or the wall up to 6 feet high, around the pool, as long as it stays no closer than 15 feet to the saltwater canal. So there's a 5-foot extra there, again, trying to compromise for the person that wants to put a pool in, and maybe they got a tight site, or they got a big house, that type of thing.
Bill, what about a screened enclosure around that pool? Is that not a fence?
That one, I'm just showing the pool deck there.
Yeah, but if this homeowner wanted to put a screened enclosure around his pool, which most people do, is that a fence or is that a screened enclosure?
That's a good question.
It's a screened enclosure.
That's going to be up. Obviously, that's going to be much higher than 4 feet high.
Right, one of the analysis, I mean, people are going to have pool. This ain't going to work for everybody. I mean, you're allowed to have a pool. You're allowed, usually your string and your pool is kind of see-through. You may be able to see it. But, you know, even with the old requirements with the step down, I mean, you can bring your house setback. I mean, your setback.
The setback is actually, let's just say, the lot next door, somebody buys it and they're fairly well-to-do and they want to put a house, they can go to 6.5 feet of the saltwater canal. I didn't notice that very much in driving through the C and F section where there's saltwater canals. I did see some that maybe are a little bit more like this. They might be 25 feet, but then, you know, their pool, occasionally I'd see a pool that might be, you know, 12, 15, 18 feet from the saltwater canal. I think what we're saying, or Ray's saying, on the screen enclosures, that's part of your pool, and we have a special section in our code that deals with that, and you just meet your setbacks. So I guess I proposed the extra 5 feet there because if you lived on the house above or on the top or below this and they put the pool in there, it's not hurting my view. So it's sort of a win-win by allowing the extra 5 feet there as long as it's set in the 7 feet.
Excuse me. Aren't we required when you put a pool in to put an enclosure of some type around it for safety reasons pertaining to OSHA? to keep small children from falling into that.
Right, so in its 4 feet, you could put up a 4 feet fence or wall or a screen enclosure.
You have to do one or the other.
Yes, sir, I have.
Okay.
So, and then, so this really has, does not affect the 4 feet wall because you can do it out there anyway, or the screen enclosure.
Yeah, that's a state law. That's Florida Building Code. So if these folks at the pool want a screen, you can't tell them no. They have to have a screen if they choose to protect you.
And this is just a summary of the proposed changes that were suggested by the city council, with the last one, they're lukewarm on at this point, so that they're, when we bring this forward, they'll look at your determination. The planning staff will not be supporting the open fences in the front yards because we feel the using the fences as the landscape features is going to take care of most people for what they wanted to use a fence for in the front yard.
Isn't number three there kind of contradictory? And two, it says allow 20 feet saltwater canals. Then it says stop required fence to be set back 3 feet from the canals. Dog clauses there.
That one's more of a freshwater canal.
Oh.
That 3 foot setback with the plantings on it, like you would on a golf course.
Would it help put in the word saltwater in front of the canals?
A freshwater
canal. Oh, that's probably a good point. Yeah. Fresh. Freshwater
canals. Right. Yeah, we tried. You know, we heard city council with some of their issues that they received from the citizens. And we hope we tried to do a compromise, but you know, we also looked at the code too and proposed, you know, maybe some other changes, such as why not allow some more colors. Have a little bit more flexibility. How about allowing the residents to, they want a landscape, to put them on the side of their fence and actually not require that. So
now, there'd be no change in non-amenitized lots that don't back up to the canals or anything. You're allowed to do your 6 foot privacy.
Absolutely.
And none of that's changing.
None of that.
This, right?
None
other than the materials, you're allowing colors. Some new materials and some new colors.
And the landscape.
And you're eliminating the landscape
right.
Behind it.
Right.
But
the step down is just for the saltwater canals.
And the open part
is
all just for saltwater. Okay.
Correct.
So I just wanted to make sure that none of
right.
That's really changing.
Right.
So.
The fresh water, you know, what we're code. That 3 foot setback. Most of our freshwater canals have pretty large easement, a maintenance easement. So, I mean, really, if you're putting a fence up, you're back anyway from that canal, and people are going to be able to see it. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Exactly. So now the code's going to make you go through back 3 feet back to that. Why? For purpose?
Yeah.
The last one here, Bill, you're talking about putting an open fence across the front of a house.
Yeah, can you put up the one graph, Bill?
Right. So this would be the one at in the bright green area at the top and at the bottom.
I wish I brought the pointer.
Yeah, the pointer.
And you can see that the house garage sticks out further from the house, so the they can actually bring the 6 foot fence up closer to the street on the north is at the top. What then it would be on the south side there.
Kind of what we presented to city council was when we went back and looked at fences in the front yard, from our recommendation, if you were going to allow it, because we got with Barbara Grossman and kind of what Palmcoast Community Service Corporation did, was they only allowed, like, this is your house. They only allowed, like, if you had a fence here.
Yeah, that could be 6 feet.
And then you step down from your front to 4 feet, open fence, just along your property boundary.
Side.
The side.
the side.
But you could have a 6-foot fence from the property line to the house.
Yes. Right. Right. What we can today.
Right. Okay.
Just a normal fence, and then the only addition would be.
So that last piece you're talking about is just the turn, the 4-foot open?
The whole fence there. So
right now that's not allowed. Is that what you're saying?
This is not allowed right now.
Yeah.
There have been people that like that idea where you can separate my property from my neighbor's property. So she said, yeah, there's going to be people that would like that because it sort of sets that boundary. Then my dog doesn't go over on the neighbor's property. So that there's pluses and minuses. And generally, when we looked at the other communities, you know, most communities do allow fences in the front yards, but we're a little bit unique that we're a suburban type city.
So right now, from the line of the house to the property line is a 6-foot fence.
Yes.
And on the street side of that, there's no fencing allowed.
Right. Right. But we're just making it clear that you can have these little things around your landscape.
That's different. That's not what you're talking about.
This one right here. Right.
Okay, so let me ask you, is there a limit to the length of that? We know it's a 4-foot open. Is there a limit?
20 feet.
In total or on each run? So 10 and 10 or 20 and 20?
Since it's connected, it would be 20.
Total. Okay. And then is there a limit that there can't be 20?
Yeah.
20, 15, 7,
with
20,
the 2-foot
gap. You know, 10 of those out there. Is there anything that addresses that?
Yeah, I guess at a certain point we might say, hey, you're starting to meet the definition of a fence, but one thought was when that question was first came up was that we said if your lot width, whatever your lot width is, you could have fencing equal to half of that.
So if your lot was 75 feet, you could have 37 and a half feet of open fence in no more than 20-foot sections.
Correct.
Well, you know, I mean,
because I would not be in favor of, you know, opening up some sort of Pandora's box where people can do what I just described, and then also, you know, who's gonna be the arbiter of, you know, on the staff level of reviewing this stuff, and someone comes in with all that. I like it or I don't like it.
And Mr. Chairman, that's what makes it real difficult because when we're basically saying you can have landscape features, okay. Because a 4-foot fence or under is not permitted. All right? It's not required by the Florida Building Code. No one is going to come in and do that. So we're saying if it's part of your landscape, my opinion, if you have 4-6 clumps of whatever out there and you want a little small 4, that may be over 4 feet. Most people are doing less than 4 feet.
That is what you're saying, right?
You know,
yeah.
If you have different clumps in your yard, why? You know, the only way that we're going to be able to enforce that is if Barbara Grossman's going out there counting landscape features. So we're just trying to clear out the code and say if you're having landscape features and it's 4 foot and under, or you have pavers that a lot of people do, go for it.
You can do as much as you want.
Go for it, because it would really be tough to regulate under 4 feet. I mean, there's.
Well, am I misunderstanding the definition of a fence? The definition of a fence is an enclosure. It's not piece. It's an enclosure. Okay? Normally, you don't allow any fences in the front yards because, number one, that really deteriorates. So, it sounds like you've got us dealing with landscaping as part of a fencing, but it's not an enclosure.
Right, what do we put for a definition?
Yeah, that would be on the third page of the fence thing. And a fence is an artificially constructed vertical barrier constructed of wood, vinyl, or metal erected to enclose, restrict, restrict access to screen or separate buildings.
Okay, there it is. It's enclosed.
So what you're saying, to be clear, is to come up with a landscape fence, landscape feature fence, or something like that?
Negative. Not in the front yards. I'm saying I would not recommend any type of fencing in the front yard. Landscaping can be, they can do it with the stones. Well, I mean, there's places where they can do it with stones. But when you say fencing, I don't think we should have fencing.
Well,
that's just my
read the rest
opinion.
Of the definition.
Yeah. Bill, Hoover, you have the rest of the definition.
Right, the rest of the
part of it.
Right. The next part of the definition is it's talking about when it's a landscape feature and not a fence. And what it states is decorative open fencing material not exceeding a height of 4 feet and a length of 20 feet that is erected along with planted shrubs or flowers as a man-made landscape feature that does not enclose, restrict access to, or screen areas.
That's a good definition.
That's good, yeah.
I just have one other question. When we talk about the fence restrictions as they relate to saltwater canals, why aren't we including freshwater canals?
Because I mentioned earlier, the freshwater canals aren't an issue. They typically, the freshwater canals has a very large easement, you know, for us to maintain. They are our treatment facilities. Like Mr. Cuff, for example, you've got, what was your easement in the back there?
I don't even know what the easement is, but, you know, the top of the slope where my fence is in my backyard has got to be a minimum of 15 feet from the edge of the water.
See,
when they come in to maintain the canal.
Right. You know. The issue with the saltwater canal, because typically it's a bulkhead, it's smaller in the area, and your neighbor, there's no real issues in the freshwater canal for neighbors to have visual of the canal because there's such a large area of open greenery space than they are for saltwater canals because we have to maintain the vegetation along the freshwater canals.
There's that 15 to 20 foot.
Right.
That you're trying to establish in the saltwater.
There's none here.
Basically the same
there's
thing.
There's none. Right.
Where the saltwater canal goes from bulkhead to bulkhead, right. That's where the property starts. The drainage easement is sort of like the road easement. It's 60 feet wide or 50 feet wide, and the road's maybe 24 right. feet wide in the middle of that. So that's where that extra 15 feet is coming from.
Okay.
Well, we actually had regulations for 3 feet back. It just makes no sense.
Talking about the landscaping, Ray, what's the rationale for removing the, I didn't even know there was a current requirement for landscaping in front of fences that are parallel to the road on the front of those fences. But it's required now. Why are we removing it?
Because... Number one, out of sight, out of mind, our experience with most of the people that are putting the landscape outside the fence are not maintaining it. And if they're just put in there because of requirement. Number two is the maintenance of it. You know, let's say I have established plans and I have just put up a fence on Belcare Parkway. So now I got to get in my car.
He's
talking about here.
I'm talking about, you know,
as that faces the road.
Yeah, I was talking about the requirement of removing landscaping on the short sections of fence
on the street side
to the road.
The fence companies putting up the fences.
Yeah,
and we've heard complaints. It's like then it's like they don't do landscaping. Now the homeowner's got to do it, and it's like, well, and if they're elderly, they may not have the ability to physically do it, so now they got to hire a landscape company come in and put plants in, and it gets expensive.
And I think when we're dealing, you know, with single family housing and folks want to put the landscape there, you know, give them the option. They're already required to have, when they do a new house, you know, to have a certain amount of landscape and keep a certain amount of trees. So, you know, look at the discretion of the homeowner if they want to plant plants there. That's all. Instead of having it as an apartment.
Another question. How in the heck does a homeowner find out about any of this stuff? If he applies, does he have to apply for the permit and he's giving a paper that states the code and everything? I don't think so. I've been there already. They do not give you anything. And I think that that is a fallacy in us making codes, and the homeowners or citizens don't even know what in the heck the codes are because we're not telling them.
See, Mr. Davis, on this case, you're making Bill Hoover's point, because a fence is required a permit through a building department. And, you know, it's required by the Florida Building Code. And they will come in for a fence permit. As a matter of fact, for this ordinance, we made it a point to contact the professionals. I don't know if you had mentioned that, the fence
probably
professionals.
We got the 12 or 13
the professionals.
Companies. Yep. That, and some of these are in Volusia County, and they come up here. So we contacted them 6-8 weeks ago for just comments. We're going to change the fence standards. And we have three contacted me back. We're real happy with the changes. And one person said, a little bit like what Mr. Davis is saying, this is the first time anybody's ever contacted us for our opinion before they changed the code. And then we don't hear about the code change till it got approved. And now all of a sudden, we just bid the job, and we're finding out that the rules changed. And then last Friday, I did notify all the fence companies again with a copy of the draft ordinance and said they could respond back to me, or they could come to either of the two hearings. And I mentioned specifically the one on June 3rd is a public hearing where they're automatically allowed to voice their opinion.
Well, your case too. I mean, you know, that those are some of the issues that zoning has. You know, some of our planning staff, when they're reviewing the zoning portion of the fence permit, you know, the fence contractor's coming in and they're building their fence, and then all of a sudden, you know, they may be from Volusia or whatever. They're not landscape folks, and then, you know, we'll say you need landscape. You know, so they, you know, they go out there. And that's pretty standard for some municipalities. But in this case, with the side yard fences and, you know, city council, and we also would recommend that we do not do side lanes here. But it's up to y'all to make that recommendation.
I know that it adds more work for notification. But as a homeowner, I would appreciate it if I'm going to have a contractor do a job for me to put up a fence, that you know that fence is going up at 23 Woodland. What's the point in not dropping a letter? We understand you've applied, your contractor has applied for a fence where your property, here are the codes pertaining to fencing. I mean, we got fences within fences within fences. You can go down Whiteview. You got a wooden fence, you got a plastic fence. Why didn't they make them take the wooden fence down?
Can I answer that question? Because a while ago, before we did our land development code in 2008, the code required, even the county code, some of the older fences require a setback from your neighbor's property, and a required setback from your neighbor's property for fencing. So now you have a fence, you have a nowhere's land in between. Now our code does not require that. You can put a fence on the property line if you want to, kind of So, you know, contacting, I would let the board, I guess, discuss contacting the folks.
But can you still do the double fence? You can, right?
Yeah, it's your property.
So that's, you can still do that. To answer your question.
Well, I mean, if we're revising the codes, to me, that's one of the things that we should be including into it. If we're allowing you to put the fence on your property line, okay, but I want to put a fence up. Well, is it all right if I say, and I know it's being done, I'm going to put the same type fence up you got. Is it all right with you if I tie in to your fence? By that, I don't mean nail it to your fence, but bring mine into your fence.
Happens all the time.
But we're giving this property owner the right to put up a fence on his property. We're giving the one that's next door to him the right to put a fence up on his property. We've got two fences. One is white picket, one is wood. You can't maintain the exterior of them.
What I'm saying is the old code had a no man's land where you didn't have the option. Now folks have options to tie in.
But I think what Glenn's saying is he's in favor of eliminating that double fence.
Yeah, but how can you say to one homeowner, I'm giving you a permit to build a fence, and then 6 months later, as a second homeowner, I'm being told I can't build a fence?
I know, that's a tough thing to deal with.
It's silly, but I have as much right to have a fence as you do.
It's not that you can't have the fence, but why would you want to put a fence up within a fence?
Because I don't like the looks of his fence. So I want a white plastic fence instead of his wooden fence.
Or he's got chain link or you know.
Yep. So I've seen that one that's open. Chain link, somebody puts a wood there.
Yeah, because I don't want to see anything, you know. I mean, I'm not saying I like that. I'm just saying that's
it
why
makes some
no
sense,
people do
but,
it.
But if you the can see people doing it.
The only thing I remember is when I moved into Palm Coast, the only fence that was permitted was a 4-foot black anchored fence. That's the only fence. Then somebody let the ball drop, and we start getting all of these non-maintained wooden fences up. We have no authority to make the homeowner maintain it when it's making the city look like crap with broken fencing and all. Why do we want our city to start turning into junk? I just don't think we should allow that. And if we're going to give city council something, boy, I'd stand up in front of them and tell them. We need to be able to govern the maintenance and upkeep of these fences that are visible to the public.
And Glenn, that would be in the code of ordinance, not the land development code.
That's code enforcement.
But you guys have specified relatively maintenance-free fences, right? You require pressure-treated wood for wood fences. Aluminum fences are relatively maintenance-free. Certainly concrete are maintenance-free. For the most part, the fencing that you allow is maintenance-free, right?
Right. The fence company told me wood fences they're not putting up very many. Now, you'll see quite a few at Home Depot and Lowe's for the homeowner, but he told me 75 to 80% of the fences they're putting up are actually the vinyl.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be a lunatic to put wood up in this part of the world.
You know, one of the things we talked about doing that as we run these code things through, you will update the application package for each one, and then we also have a technical manual that's getting a little bit stale, I guess, at this point, and we will update that. So upcoming, some of the things that we'll be looking at here would be, let's say, the whole landscape section is one, and another one is on the transportation. So we have a draft done that we're working
on. So when you say application package, if a homeowner comes into City Hall and says, I want to get a permit for, I'm going to put a fence up, there's an application package that includes these kinds of rules?
Right. And we revise that. Every time we're going to go through a code change, we are going to go and look at our application patch, and it kind of touched on you.
I was going to say, that's what you're getting.
Exactly.
So what Glenn is talking about is the rules, telling the homeowner when he applies for a permit, these are the rules you have to conform to.
But we're not doing it now.
No, the building department has their applications, and they have their certain standards. 99% of the folks, and I'm, you know, I could be off a few numbers, it's a contractor who puts up the fences. All of our contractors know our regulations. We brought them in early on this, and we will send them information on the fence code changes so they're aware of the changes. They're agreeing, I think, with the changes. The majority of our education is going to be with the contractors. But yes, the homeowners, if a homeowner comes in and the homeowner wants to put up a chain link fence, we will have applications there that tell the homeowners this is what type of fence and our regulations.
Isn't a fence inspected too?
Yes.
By the building department?
Yeah.
So if a fence is put up and it's not conforming, before the building department signs off on that fence, they have to go inspect it.
Right.
That's assuming someone pulled the fence permit.
Well, now, you know, yeah, I can tell you from personal experience.
The people that don't pull the fence permit, then, you know, at some point they may get.
But I can tell this from personal experience because my son tried to put a fence up.
Right.
Within about a minute of him putting the first post in the ground, the building department was there because some neighbor called.
Yeah.
Right. And really, my understanding where the people are looking is they're looking online on the city's website. So they're going on there looking under community development, and let's say you're talking about rezoning or a variance, they'll go in there and look on. So generally that information is obtained on site, not really coming down to our office.
And the LDC's on the website, so.
Right.
Right, yeah. And as far as, they're not going to want to read the code that's the way it's written, but on the fence application, we will give them a simplified version that is more geared to the person with a high school education rather than reading this stuff that attorneys and planners actually enjoy reading this sometimes, but not too many other people.
And I would tell you, you know, just with our fencing, it is we haven't had any issues with neighbors and not knowing the standards in our current contractors of our current code. Because, quite frankly, they're over-the-counter permits. They come in over-the-counter, they give it to either a building technician or a zoning technician, they look at it, they're standard, they're out the door. They know the requirements. You know, it's a very quick permit to get.
Well, being the president of a homeowners association in Virginia for years, we ran into the same type of problem with fences within fences. We passed and we sent out, if you apply for a fence, you have to at least notify your neighbor so that if there's any objection, they could come before the board and object to you putting a fence up within a fence if they already had a fence. Here.
Well, I think you can do that on a deed restricted community level. I'm not sure you can do that on a citywide level. You
know? I can see that.
When you looked at 10 different cities, did you see any of that? Or
no, that's the municipalities and counties out there, when we write a permit, that's a rare one that we ask them to talk to their neighbors. And the times I've seen it is if you want to close an alley or you want to maybe close a drainage easement, that type of thing, like a stub street that goes no place. That you got to get the neighbor's permission, or if you're asking for a variance, we'll frequently notify the neighbors in there that they can come to the public hearing. But deed restrictions are typically more strict than the county in the the governmental agencies do not want to get that strict and give the neighboring property owner that much power.
I mean, I would assume we have some communities in this, within the city and county that do have more restrictive fence guidelines than our neighbor, right?
I think you have to be real careful when you start going into asking neighbors. You can get some neighbors that are from hell. And you, no matter what you want to do, they're going to find a reason or a way to try to stop you. So you have to be careful, real careful about this idea involving a neighbor.
So then the city gets caught in a lawsuit.
Then you get short, that's exactly.
Bill, you just brought up and made me think of another issue. I build a fence and I change the pitch of my land so that water drains onto a neighbor's land.
Well, that's in the code that says that you can't allow that. The fence cannot be somewhere in the area.
Is it in the code?
Yeah,
we've got something there that would get reviewed in the fence thing. So if you're putting a berm in, then that counts on your height. But if we're seeing that you're putting a berm in, that's probably going to the stormwater.
Yeah, what happens typically on the fences, they're typically over-the-counter permits. But if there may be some rare situations where maybe some drainage possibly is really close or potentially could be effective, then that permit's reviewed by our stormwater engineering department.
Oh, okay.
That happens sometimes. Mr. Chairman, we have the draft, the strikeout and underlying draft. I don't know if y'all want to kind of go through that and, you know, if y'all read or have any questions on that, where we need to tweak something or where we can go back and take a look at it.
What's everyone think?
I think we just beat the hell out of it. Where's Bill? Where are you on your presentation, Bill?
I was just going to ask if you wanted to go to drinking establishments.
Oh, you're done with the fences?
Yeah, we're done with the fences.
Yeah. Okay. I'm fairly comfortable with what we've got here. I think, frankly, to my way of thinking, the 4-foot open fence is Pandora's box. I kind of agree with you guys. But that's not worth the trouble.
You mean the one going out the front?
This
one, right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that is a Pandora's box.
Is there, if I can ask, because that would help us, because that was really one of... you know, where we're not there, and so the 4-foot open fence, if we can, because we'll go back and draft the code and take it out. Because the next time you may be recommending, if y'all don't want the 4-foot open fence, we won't put it in the draft.
Glenn?
I don't think we should have any front yard fencing.
I agree.
No front yard fencing.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't recommend the 4-foot open fence.
I wouldn't recommend that.
I wouldn't either. So you got five.
Okay, I'm not clear though. Glenn said any.
Well,
we're not talking about the landscape features.
No,
that's not a fence.
Well, as long as you would change the landscape feature.
These are under 4 feet.
To eliminate fence.
The word fence.
If the board's pleasure was, if you didn't like, let's go up to the picture here. If you don't like what's on the left, we can make the option on the right and spell that out and not even allow.
That's what should be done.
What the definition says now is decorative open fencing material. Doesn't talk about a fence. Talk about fencing material.
Right.
And that picket fence there is fencing material, right?
It's fencing material. It's a fence, part of a fence, because look at the fence in the back.
Yep.
It's the same fence in the back that we're putting in the front. So don't tell me it's not part of the fence.
Okay.
Okay, let me ask you this, Mr. Davis, because this is a workshop, so I'm kind of being a little informal. I've got a 2-foot, you can buy them. I've got maybe 2 foot, foot and a half. We've got the fencing, the picket kind of fencing, very common that you see those around landscape. Is that a fence? Are you saying no to that?
I'm saying no to anything above
4 feet.
A foot.
Above a foot.
Or 2 foot.
So that's your option. We can change that definition.
That's why I'm saying that we should eliminate.
Right.
We should go with the picture on the right as part of what we would allow in a front yard. Now, we have that over on, I mean, there's people that have done that already, that type of thing. The only time I've ever heard of a special request for a fence in the front yard is if a child was in the homeowner was deaf or something of that nature.
Some handicap.
A handicap type thing. Okay, but that would have to be something that would be done one-on-one.
Yeah, but
you know, but this, a valid point. This also could be a Pandora's box.
But let me ask you something, just for clarification. So this looks too much like a fence, and we're talking. I just want to focus on get clarification on landscape features. If this was 2 feet instead of the 4, where you had a little kind of border around your landscape feature, around your landscape. Is that okay?
No.
What if it was papers? It looked like
common, the common sense would tell most of us intelligent people that if we're going to do something of that nature in your front yard, you would build a planter, basically, is what you're going to be building. And we should restrict the height of that planter and not use the word fencing at all.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We change, don't call it a fence. If it's 2 feet or 3 feet, it's not a fence. We're saying, you know, the fence on the side is 4 feet. We said that, and that's where I think the confusion is, where I'm confused, is, you know, I'm just trying to clarify that we allow landscape features. They're landscape features. They're not fence. In my mind, landscape features are not fences. Yes, they border around a plant. If this was not brick and this was another material, not a fence, but some kind of solid cedar planks or whatever going around this, I'm not calling that a fence. If that material was made with this material going around that planter, I am not calling that a fence. Now, if it comes out here, you know, parallel, not only, I'm calling that a fence. I'm calling this a landscape feature, and I'm calling this a landscape feature.
I'm not.
Well, you know, if you look at the definitions, in the definition of a fence, the second half of the
nine,
yeah, says decorative open fencing material not exceeding a height of 4 feet and a length of 20 feet that is erected with all with planted shrubs or flowers as a man-made landscape feature does not enclose restrict access to or screen areas is not considered a fence. You go down one more when it talks about the definition of a wall. If you look at the last sentence, decorative wall material is not exceeding a height of 2 feet, erected with planted shrubs or flowers as a landscape feature, do not enclose, restrict, or screen areas are not considered a wall. So a fence is 4 feet. It is not a fence if it's 4 feet. And a wall is not a wall if it's 2 feet.
And
so why shouldn't both of them be 2 feet?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think that's a good suggestion.
It does not enclose. It's not enclosing.
They both say the same thing about not enclosing or blocking access.
Right.
But my point is, one says 4 feet, the other one says 2.
Right.
So make them both 2.
Right. I think
that's the point. You guys want to take a vote?
Good. So
they don't have. Make you happy?
You don't have to vote, but you can. There's
a workshop.
Consensus.
A workshop.
So if you have a consensus,
so what they can feet, vote on a workshop.
Both up 2 feet.
Where does
with that same language.
Oh, here it is.
They have to get it on record that
here
we have agreed upon.
No fence or wall shall interfere with water drainage or something. But it's already
so that it can't go to council and be changed.
I'm in favor of keeping the two of them in the 2 foot.
What we say.
Keep the same height. Yeah, consistent.
So that's the consensus.
Yeah. I mean, Mr. Davis would like to eliminate all of that. I understand that too. But
I agree with that suggestion. Yeah.
If we could, at minimum, we could at least keep it down to two.
The That, I don't think we need a limit on the walls because I don't think
no, the 2 feet is fine.
Once we drop to 2 feet, do you want a cap of how much you can have in your front yard?
Yeah.
No. What? Yes?
You don't? On the fence?
What, that's
no fence? Landscape features.
Yeah.
Too little 2 feet? Yes, 20 feet.
Yeah, well, that's what he's asking.
No, it doesn't say 20 feet.
Say a maximum of two. It says he wanted to. 20 feet. Or maximum of 40 feet.
See, here's the one. The wall definition, the one on the right,
there's
says
no
2 feet high.
There's no length.
There's no length on it. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the other one.
There's no length on it.
Yeah, there's no length on that on the wall.
But there is on the other one.
But there is on the other
one. That's the question he was asking.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I say you're conflicting.
Even reducing the height to 2 feet?
Even reducing it to 2 feet, you're still saying they can put 20 feet of it up. But if you do with the wall, we have no measure, no length. You can put 100 feet up if you want to. We don't care.
Just like
you go across your whole front property with a 100-foot, 2-foot wall, concrete wall.
Around a landscape feature.
So they plant a bush behind it. That's landscaping. That's not... as long as you plant a plant, it's landscaping.
Then maybe we need to say abutting a little bit more clear with language such as this. I mean, if they had this plant right here, Mr. Davis, okay, they had nothing there. It makes no sense for them to, I don't know who would spend that money and time to put it around a landscape feature, but I mean, we could say abutting or some sort of language that clarifies that. I mean, it's a landscape feature. You got to have your wall and your landscape feature around landscape.
But you know, this definition, you don't. That does not have to be enclosed. One side of that wall, if that one side of that wall wasn't there, that still fit this definition.
If you did your whole front yard. I think you just restricted the access or you screened it, mm-hmm. and so now you wouldn't be able to
that's true.
Do that.
Do your whole front yard?
Landscaping bed.
Across the whole front yard?
Yeah. What's to stop them?
Well, if you're already
it's blocking access.
It's blocking access. Access to what?
If you said that wait a minute, you already said the landscaping feature can only be 20 feet. So how is he going to put this in a...
No, we didn't say the landscaping feature can only be 20 feet. The fence that they have there is 20 feet. There's nothing on the bricks. There's no measurement on the brick. Whether it's to be enclosed and make into a bed... Or if it's a wall just in the front and nothing in the back.
We're not talking walls. It has to be a landscape feature like this. We're not talking walls.
If
you can't put up
a wall.
It's a landscape feature. I think a lot of times you'll see them put it right in front of their house. Put a wall 4 feet just to decorate around there. That will keep the grass from intruding into the shrubs and flowers.
I've seen koi ponds.
Koi ponds. Can I just ask? I mean, we allow it now. We're just trying to clarify the code that you can have landscape features. My experience, I haven't seen an outrage of folks putting in hundreds of feet of landscape feature walls and fences. I don't know if it's a big issue to. Limited to tell you the truth. I mean, so I don't know. We'll take your consensus and recommendation.
Do not enclose, restrict, or screen areas are not considered a wall. So even if you took 100 feet and put it across the front of your house and put some plants behind it, you would restrict your access to the property. And therefore, it would not. It would be a wall.
I got a 20-foot driveway. Yeah. I'm not restricting you from coming into my yard. But the way that the that I'm seeing done now, because of the swale problems that we're having, is people are going in on their property and placing a seawall effect to keep their land from washing away. Because every time they do a swale, where does the excess dirt come from? Your yard. So they're blocking it. You're saying that if they did that, and I've got people that have done that, and put a wall all the way across the front in between their U driveways, they put that type of wall and they landscape behind it. That's landscaping. They're not restricting you.
I will tell you, anything in the city's right of way, a structure or a wall, will need a permit and an agreement. And I actually signed an agreement for driveways, for example, with pavers or something like that. Any structures within our right of way and our swell system, our stormwater departments look at it and make sure that indeed. And I would encourage you, if you see something like that, Mr. Davis, you can definitely give us a call. If it's impeding, if there's a structure out there that wasn't permitted.
Well, I can only go on what is happening or what is there. The majority of times, residents are not going to go and get a permit. It's like, okay, I got caught, so I'll go get the permit. You can't make me tear it down.
Yes, we can. Yes, sir.
You'd be in court. You'd definitely be in court.
It's our right of way.
It's the thing, and I just, this is just an example. Okay. I just paid $6,900 to replace my son's driveway. Okay? Had to replace the pipe in the swale. That's mandatory by the city. If you tear a driveway up, you have to replace that pipe. The grade is actually a foot and a half below what they've got out there. I have questioned it on it. And the inspector said that's the grade it has to be. So I got a swale, I got a hole, I got the pipe, I got a hole, and I got the swale.
You're going to have water.
You're going to have water.
You're going to have lakes.
Right. So they're going to come out and dig the swales out, which means his yard, instead of going like this, is going to go like this. Now, how is he going to protect that?
Plant grass.
You know how he's going to protect it? He's going to put up a brick barrier to keep his yard from washing away. You have to put a limit on a landscaping enclosure. If it's a landscaping enclosure, then it's completely all the way around it or halfway around it.
That's halfway.
But fencings, I'm sorry, people. Fencings in the front yard are so tacky. They're just tacky. And as if any of you are sitting here that don't see that they don't maintain, you're wrong. I bet you even in your neighborhood, you can see your neighbor's fence not being maintained. So what are you going to do? You know? That's why I decided not to put a fence up. I put hedges up. I made a natural barrier.
Hedges on that.
So, I mean.
You have to maintain.
Well, as it's written, you're not allowed fencing in the front. As we have it right here.
Right. I don't think we should have any type
of fence. It's not allowed. Now, what is allowed is 2 feet now is what we're saying of a open section of a what you're calling a fence. Yeah. That's how it is right now.
It's fencing material.
Fencing material.
Fencing material.
As a landscape feature.
You know, the 20 feet can be reduced to six. The fences come in 6 or 8 foot sections.
Yeah.
So if you want to drop that to 16 feet, or 8, but you know, that's your prerogative.
I'd put it 16 feet.
I'd say we're going to drop it.
I'd put it 16. 16 is good.
You know?
So 2 feet high and 16 feet total.
And the, you want a cap of how many, or based on the front yard?
Way in the front yard.
Just have 2, or?
It's a percentage.
No more than 2, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll say a percentage of the front yard.
That gets it about as restrictive as short of none whatsoever.
Okay, so you've answered that little part about defense.
Yeah.
Now, let's go to picture A on the right.
We're okay with that.
Okay.
2 feet high.
But you don't have any limit on...
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I was thinking about this too. Now, why shouldn't that say something about enclosing a landscape feature? Making sure that this wall comes back and connects to itself, like you have there.
Every one I've seen actually does that.
I know. But you could make what Glenn talked about, you could make the thing 100 feet straight across and put plantings behind it with no wall behind. So could we say that this decorative wall material would have to connect, enclosing planted shrubs or flowers as a landscape feature?
So expensive.
I think we can. When I looked online at some of the pictures, sometimes they stack them up in front of the tree, where it's maybe a 6 or 8 inch tree, let's say, diameter.
Yeah.
Then they taper them back down. Mm-hmm. So in that case, they wouldn't meet the requirement of landscape.
Yeah. Or they use another material.
Because you're tying into grade is why you do that.
I think here, which is so flat, that in the front, our front yards are, everything's flat, right?
No. So mine is sloped, because I have the moon. Yeah. Saltwater canal. It comes down like that.
Your front yard?
It's sloped.
Oh, okay.
Now, all of them are.
Well, if it encloses the plants and the shrubs, and it isn't 2 feet high in the back, it's only 6 inches high in the back, and no more than 2 feet high in the front.
But it might not.
It still encloses.
But it might not enclosed. Connect, is what we're saying. It may be a moon.
Yeah, get ready to do the same thing with the tree in the front.
Okay.
Build up a little bit.
To go around a tree.
A C-shape.
Yeah. So, I mean,
you see that a lot more than I do.
It's true. But the other thing is the materials.
Well, I think it says, it talks about stone, brick, or masonry, right? Is it?
But
somewhere didn't it say something about wood?
No, not in the wall.
No.
I mean, if you use
landscaping timbers?
No.
You don't have any regulations.
It says stone, brick, or masonry.
Landscape timbers are 3 inches high.
So you could use landscape timbers then, is what we're saying.
Is that right?
Let me see what it says.
Yeah.
So you're putting wood in the front.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's smart, dumb enough to put wood.
You do see some people that...
You've lived here longer than I have, Mr. Henderson.
Railroad ties.
Yeah, railroad ties.
And if they were treated, you can see what those carpenter ants did to that.
But, you know, they do sell
the second
them.
Second year, I'm digging that stuff out.
Them, you know?
That's right.
So I think we got some good guidance there on the glossary. Other?
Let's at least go here to drinking establishment.
What's the second one? Here, dear to my heart.
Right there.
There you go. Where is that place?
Your favorite spot. Ray will tell you about it.
Is that Hooligan?
That's a site in Oregon.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's on the Palm Coast.
No, I mean, that's Lake Charles.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
Palm Coast has 2 levels of drinking establishments and how we regulate those. And the first one is bars, taverns, and nightclubs without discotex or live entertainment. Those are the lower intensity ones.
And we got the high intensity ones, they either have the disco or the live entertainment. That doesn't work real well. And this is a zoning map showing the low intensity ones. So all the orange area on here is neighborhood commercial or COM 1. And you would be a lot, you could actually come in and make sure I'm telling you correct here. In COM 1, you could go in there and put a bar right now next to residential. Mm-hmm. So the city council asked us to make that more conservative. The next slide is going to show, this would be Palm Coast in Belterre, the road coming up on the left side of the screen. The dark purple area there is in the middle, is actually the Ford dealer, just sort of, you know. But you can see the rest of this red area, that's the COM 2, and that would allow the low intensity ones or the more intense bars. The more intense bars would have to get a special exception, so you'd get a chance to go through that. The other thing the city council looked at was brew pubs and microbreweries, and they liked that thought and encouraged us to draft some language that would allow the microbreweries. And basically, a brew pub is it's a restaurant or a bar that has a microbrewery there. So the initial directions to the staff on the drinking establishments was to no longer allow bars, taverns, and nightclubs in the office and neighborhood commercial districts or the COM 1. Modify the standards so we're not talking about disco and live entertainment, because if you have somebody playing a guitar, one person playing a guitar or singing, that's actually live entertainment. If they're doing it inside the bar, who cares? That's probably going to keep the crowd a little bit mellow.
Yeah.
But once it goes outside, my experience as a planner, we've had two major problems with that, because then their neighbors start calling the, so if you make it a special exception, now we can, if it runs through the process, and if it's in the gray area, you can conditionally approve that and limit the hours and things like that, maybe the number of performers. So there's all sorts of options by having this threshold like that.
Yeah, when we did the code in 2008, and some of the members were there. When we did, really the intent, if y'all remember, for discotheques and live entertainment, outdoor entertainment, in our minds, because I remember workshops were, these big, large, number one, they don't have discotheques anymore, so we're kind of updating that language. I haven't seen a discotheque since 1976. But, it became problematic with some folks. Live entertainment. You go to the Irish pub, you're going to have a guitar player there. I mean, that's not really what the intent was. So we're trying to clear up, and like with Bill's experience, and when you start getting outdoors, that's when you really start coming into some of the issues.
And the third thing was just updating the terminology on drinking and eating establishments. And you can see the subtitle here in this little section of table 3.4, eating, drinking, and entertainment all come together. So we cleaned up the restaurant stuff a little bit while we were doing this code here. And basically, and then we created a definition for fast food restaurant and a sit-down restaurant. And those are, these definitions, that's where we looked at the other 10 cities a lot, and also the online a little bit, and also some of the planning magazines have definitions in there. So the, for instance, on the microbrewery, there's a limit of how many barrels they can do per year, of 15,000. And that's from the National Association of Microbreweries. Mm-hmm. So in our planning magazine, they've had a couple articles over the last 15 months on microbreweries and brew pubs, because they're exploding across the country. So that's part of the reason, and the city manager's actually from Oregon, and that's the biggest proliferation in the country is out in Oregon, because that sort of things happen out there a little bit earlier. So if you look at Orlando and the bigger places, it's happening there. So we're just trying to get ahead of the curve.
We have one here.
Here.
No.
We don't have one as far as I know.
Was there one out down in Congo Break?
No, that was just a distillery or whatever. They were making like vodka.
Oh, they were making alcohol. Oh, okay.
Spirits.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
just
guys
making vodka. So, if I'm reading this correctly, were you done?
Yes, sir.
If I'm reading this correctly, really probably the most significant change from our existing code to the proposed change is in Table 3.1. We will no longer allow drinking establishments without entertainment in COM 1
is an office,
and then in either one of the, and there's office
districts. You can't even apply for a special. In my experience as a planner, I have never seen an ability to apply for one in an office district.
Yeah, I think that's a good change.
That's what we use as a transition from the commercial to the residential
side. Right. Somewhere else in the city code, there's hours, right?
Yeah, the code of ordinance,
yes.
I'd see a couple on this table here is underlined the special exception and the, what is it?
Permitted.
Mm-hmm. Why are those underlined?
Because they're added.
Those are new.
Well, those are the ones you added.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a little hard to see on this table because the font's so small.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy with this.
I think it's a good cleanup.
So essentially bars or drinking establishments now,
right?
Whether they have indoor entertainment or not, or outdoor entertainment or not, are not allowed anywhere but in COM 2, COM 3, and MPDs.
Yeah.
That's cool. MPD, like European
Village. European Village, yeah.
Well, the clubhouse at Grand Avenue. Another example. That's enough people.
Yeah.
What fast food restaurants?
What?
Can you drive up to a window and buy a beer?
Nothing to do with beer.
Or any alcoholic beverage?
None. But this isn't all alcohol. That's only the first three things.
I'm reading the next page. Under the definition of restaurants and fast foods, they have the word bar.
Yeah, they do.
Now, if that's not a fast food restaurant, a bar ain't.
Well,
not
what do you mean by bar?
Yeah, what do you mean by bar?
Huh? That's a table.
Counter.
Yeah,
a counter.
So it's not a...
We got counter, we really don't need bar.
Yeah.
Like at Subway. Subway by Winn-Dixie, there's a bar by the window.
It is a little bit confusing.
Yeah,
I mean, the word bar, I can go to McDonald's and get a beer.
Well, I have a breakfast bar at my house.
Oh, you going to, well, you inviting us over now?
No, but even it's like. What it's called, a breakfast bar.
But the word counter works for it.
Yeah. Just drop the word bar, and I think you'd be fine.
Any other comments from the board on that?
Did they ask about, I know that some communities have put a restriction on, like Bike Week and all, where they only open during Bike Week to sell beer and entertainment and stuff. Do we allow that in Palm Coast?
We don't have anything like it.
Well, what's to say we can?
We have our special events permit.
Permit, yeah.
Like, Town Center, Central Park, you have a food and wine festival.
Food trucks.
It's regulated by
but
the state.
But they would have
as
to
well.
Conform to these, to the zoning, right?
No, special events are a separate ordinance, and they can, for special occasions, like festivals, those type of things, you have to get a temporary alcohol.
So,
it's not permanent.
So the broker spoke, an Ormond could come to the Popco City Council and ask for a special exemption to open a tent bar.
Special events. Yeah, we have an application at the city for special events.
But the city council would have to agree with it.
Oh, city council already approved a special events ordinance that has all that criteria in there.
Then who approves it?
It's staff initiated. Although they set the criteria, for example, the state gets involved with the temporary alcohol license.
Yeah, that's true.
Real quick, we got Arbor Day celebrate, State Food and Wine Festival. There's an application that comes in. They're required to get their state and prove that they have their state licensing for their temporary alcohol licensing. If they're cooking food, that has certain requirements. If they're putting tents up, they have to meet the Florida Building Code, yep. Fire protection codes. And so we have a whole city team dedicated technical staff. We hold meetings once a month these applications come in. They review fire, safety, closing roads, all those type of things.
Okay.
So what you're saying is it's like tents. What I'm hearing from the other communities are like buildings that they're old. They open them up as bars just for Bike Week, let's say, okay? And I understand that they've restricted that. If they're not open year-round, they won't allow them to open part-time. We don't have any of that, right?
No, we have special events application where you can have a special event, and you can have up to, two special events a year or something like that. But
you hold it in a building, or does it have to be like a tent, to me, when you're saying the special event,
if you hold it in the building, then you need a license. You need an alcohol license, and has to meet certain requirements for occupancy. It's still going to have to meet certain Florida Building Code requirements and occupancy loads and those type of things.
To Glenn's point, if you go down US 1 at Ormond Beach, going south or north, doesn't really make any difference. Above the Tomoka River, there are several what look like to be bars that are not open for a good portion of the year. You could fly right by them. There's no cars in them. There's no lights on or anything. And then Bike Week comes, and presto changeo, the lights go on, the signs start flashing, and the bar's there. And it's there for 3 weeks or 2 weeks, and then it's closed down again.
Does it open up like during race week?
Yeah, but that's what the ordinance was like down in Ormond Beach. That was where they had the ordinance that if they didn't open year round for a certain number of days,
it's changed. Yes,
that's right.
Just recently, right? Yeah.
All right, so we don't have. I'm just.
We don't have that ordinance.
That would be in the land development
code of ordinance.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think you.
I think we got some new guidance. We'll go back and we'll redraft and bring them back on the 3rd.
Okay.
And remember, the 3rd will be over at city offices at 5:30.
Oh, very good. So the 3rd is definite.
Yes.
The 10th is still up and
running. Yeah, 10th is.
So far, what are you? Yep.
Well, I think, and just real quick, that's a good segue, is I want to talk briefly. I'd like to get the board's idea on these special meetings that we're having, not so much for code work, but special meetings like we've had, the last few months
for items such as the one, you know, this is the living one, and then we've got one coming to us on the 3rd. In addition to the code work, we've got an item that's coming there on the 3rd. And I'm going to state my opinion. Frankly, I'm concerned about the amount of special meetings and the precedent that we're setting for certain developers or all developers that when they don't want to wait for a regularly scheduled business meeting, they request a special meeting. And I'm not sure that I'm real comfortable with setting that precedent. That's my opinion. I'm one person. I'd like to, you know, like to see if anybody else feels that way. If they don't, it's fine. We can special meet as much as y'all want. But I spoke to Ray about that today, that I've got an issue with that. So.
And I will say the way the code is written for the special meetings is a discretion. Usually the chair will call a special meeting too. So, but
I agree with you. We seem to be catering more to things that have been going on for years, and then all at once it has to be done like yesterday, and we call it then as a special meeting, and a wheeler that winds up being tabled or something like that. I think I agree with you. There are too many of them. We're becoming a committee that we're at the whim of whoever wants to call for a meeting because they've got a project or something going on, and they've been going on for like 10 years, and now they want it. It's got to be done today type thing. I agree with you, Mr. Beebe. I think we're having too many of them.
Frankly, I'm inclined to agree with you, too, and I think my problem is setting of expectations. If these developers know that if they don't get something done ready for the planning board by the 3rd Wednesday, they're going to have to wait another month, they're more likely to put dot their I's and cross their T's. If they know that they could just come to the planning board and say, oh, would you hold a special meeting for me, then that's their expectation. And I don't think that's an expectation we ought to entertain. I think we ought to make them understand that we meet on the 3rd Wednesday of the month, and if they want something done, they better have it in and approved by the planning department before that meeting.
Yeah, and I just don't want to beat it to death. I think it's a bad idea for the citizens to try to show up for some of these meetings that aren't regular participants and come to a meeting that's adjourned or postponed or whatever. I think it lessens public participation, either for or against. And I think it also creates the perception, I certainly hope there isn't any reality to it, but I think there's a logical perception that if you're big enough or you have the right advocate or you have somebody's ear at City Hall, you get a meeting when you need it. Or if you've got a sexy project, get a meeting when you need it to meet your business needs, not to meet the needs of the city staff or the planning board or whatever. It's bad business. I mean, I like to be open to business and try to be user friendly, but I really think we're creating a perception that, like I said, if you've got the right people that have pull, you get a meeting when you need it, not when their schedule, and I don't think that's a perception the city wants to encourage.
Well, I've been on this board for a long time, and I don't remember too many times in the past where we allowed a special meeting because somebody had a project they wanted to have completed at a particular time. It's only been in the last year and a half that this has occurred. And I agree that this is something that is not really a good idea to start. I haven't said anything before, but you're right. This is not a good idea to have a project come up whenever they decide that they're ready. Oh, well, we'll just run it by the planning board whenever we get around to it. I don't know of many developers or planning groups that don't schedule a plan based on what their normal expectations should be.
If there, our normal expectations are the third Wednesday of the month, I can't imagine that if they know that this is the normal occurrence, that they wouldn't plan for it. And I think that what's had, most people don't have spur of the moment plans, not when you're talking about large projects. So I think that we were setting a precedent that could be snipped in the bud right now.
Pretty solid.
Yeah, and I know I did hear, you know, the possibility, do we need to you know, go to two meetings a month instead of one, and then, you know, and that way, you know, we have that flexibility. I'm not saying that
we once should a do month that, but it's
that was also, you know, I heard someone mention that too. So I don't know how, you know, I mean, I know things are getting busier, but back, like Mr. Henderson said, even back in the heyday.
In the heyday, I mean, when they were going like, they were crazy.
I'm assuming you still were meeting.
We had one meeting.
Right. I mean, I know city council meets twice a month, but, you know.
Sometimes we didn't get out of here until 11, 12 o'clock, but we had one meeting.
I think it would have, scheduling on a regular basis more than one meeting a month would interfere with my real life.
No, I mean, that's honest. I mean, this is a, you know, this is not a paid position. Yeah. I do understand that.
Well, you have
And you know, the other part is that I do know that it's a burden on the staff too, when with these special meetings, to try to rush and evaluate and cram things in. And I don't want to speak for them, but you know, they do a good job of getting us prepared. But you know, I'm not in favor of trying to make them have to jump through a lot of extra hoops. They jump through, you know, the normal hoops.
Yeah, I can tell you, our philosophy has been get her done as quick as possible. I mean, we, as a regulatory agency, you know, our planning division, a lot of times we get, you know, a lot of negativity and, you know, the stereotypes, but we actually try to do our best to go above and beyond. And I think some of the folks who experience this will know that, of looking at things before, you know, the actual application is in, and trying to give good guidance, doing things like we are now, clearing out the code and looking at the code. So we really strive to really get these projects going, especially some of our, you know, our commercial and our subdivision, the site plans. And, you know, we will. I mean, you know, when the applicant tells us, hey, you know, we've got a deadline, we need to meet this, I'll call the chairman up and can we have a special meeting. I think in this certain circumstance with this application, you know, that we continued like three times, was we never got to an agreement on it. And it wasn't, you know, they, you know, keep working at it. And finally, I think, you know, it's come to an agreement. But some of the issues are when it comes to ordinances, I guess. Like if it's a site plan, you know, the reason we had a special meeting on the third, we have a site plan that y'all would have a final approval when it goes to the council, because we thought that this island walk, this ordinance would be going a third. Obviously it's not. So not the problem, but you know, for you it may be 1 or 2 weeks, but the issues with the ordinances that go to city council is that it takes two readings. So for example, the reason we were trying with the applicant to try to get it at a special meeting on the 10th is because we wanted to try to get your recommendation before it went to the city council on the 16th, okay? Because a lot of times the way the dates are, if the planning board wanted to hear it first, and I think that's optimal, you know, we all kind of agree to get that city council recommendation, then they would have to wait almost a whole month before getting heard by the planning board to meet that city council, because the next city council day would be on the 16th. So our next planning board meeting will be on the 17th. So they wanted to try to get on the 16th for city council, which means, hey, we hear it first before it goes to city council. Now, if they come back and want to go to the 17th, I assure you that if it goes to their first reading, because it would be an ordinance, they would go to city council first, the 16th, then they would come to planning board on the 17th for your recommendation, And then the next meeting for city council would be the 7th, where we would provide your recommendation. But we'd like to try to get your recommendation before that first meeting. That's why.
Ray, I'm not. I understand what you just said, but why are they coming to us for a recommendation if it's not required? If they need it done on the 16th and our recommendation to the board isn't a part of the mandatory process, why bother bringing it?
No, it is required.
Well,
it is required.
In that case, we're back to where we started. This is a multi tens of millions of dollars project. I mean, I think to Ray's point or whatever. I mean, it seems like we're jumping through hoops for the big guys, and the little people just wait in line until we have a meeting. If it takes a couple extra months, say, what the heck, you know, no big deal. If you're, you know, if you're the sexy project and you need it done, you know, the staff can jump through hoops, we can all show up a couple extra nights on. Just to me,
I don't see it.
I mean, on the one hand, the city brags about how business friendly they are, and I guess that's an example of it, but I don't see it for the little guys, I guess is what I'm saying.
I would tell you.
We would never hold a special meeting for mom and pop, whatever.
If,
I mean, we would rarely.
I will tell you this.
Yeah.
I will tell you this.
Yeah.
It makes no difference to me if it's the Island Walks in the World for redevelopment or if it's the mom and pop. If the mom and pa came to me, Mr. Cuff, and said, I only have a short period of time, I really need to get through it, I would do the same.
Well, I mean, I appreciate that, Ray, but I think if the public's even paying attention to this, the people that have showed up several times to talk about grand women, and I don't mean to pick on them, but that's the one that's been continuing.
You're right, Bob. It's not reality, it's perception.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, if I'm a citizen that wants to talk to this board or the city council about Grand Landing and Grand Living, and I show up the first time and it's been postponed, I show up another time and it's been postponed, I show up a third time when it's a special meeting that, I mean, I'm not even sure, I know they're published, but to me it's not good for public participation. It's a bad perception, and I'm not saying that perception is reality, except in the minds of the taxpayers and the voters, I think it is. You know?
In my opinion, it's the same. Case stays the same. Grand Landing may not be big time. The Publix was a fairly big project. I can understand both of them. And I can understand mom and pop. The person who would probably need a special meeting would be mom and pop, because normally their funding is predicated on a particular date. Projects like
they don't have any power.
These big projects. Grand Landing, this guy, the money's there. He's not worried about it, you know? So if he doesn't start this month, he starts next month. Well, then what that is. And the idea that somebody can waltz in here and say, we got to have this before XYZ date, and we want you to have a special meeting. I'm a little bit perturbed by that.
Well, I think you have a good consensus.
Yeah, well, I appreciate everybody's input. I just thought, you know, we needed to at least discuss it a little bit. You know, the meeting on the third set, going forward,
we need to start to look at it from the point of view of where are we going to stand, how things are going to be run. Things are going to break open wide open. There's going to be a lot of people coming in here saying they want to have this done or that done, or they want to bring this.
What do you mean you want to hold a special meeting? You're helping for so-and-so.
Yes, and it's going to be, why can't we have a special meeting? And before you know, listen, once a month, fine. Unless, of course, we're doing something for the city itself, where that's different, like
ordinances
and code.
These projects, they're coming anyway. This idea is that we're unfriendly and that they're not coming because we're unfriendly, that's a lot of crap. They told us this in 2008. They said, the restaurants are not coming because the hotels and restaurants are not coming because your people are very unfriendly. And this previous city manager, before you, I forget his name.
Kelton?
No, not city manager, the planner.
Drew?
Kelton?
No. He was the city manager. He went to work for...
Jason.
Jason. He told us, he says, you guys are so unfriendly. They're not coming. This is the reason they're not... this was a perception that Palm Coast is unfriendly to business. They're not coming. Charlie Faulkner stood right there at that pipeline and said, that's why they're not coming. Well, guess what? They're still coming because when the population reaches a certain point, no matter what you say about what's going on down here, they're coming because the money is where they're after. They're going to come regardless, and they can come once a month.
Well, we need to go on record of that as well. I believe, Mr. Beebe, that we're just becoming available to them at any time that they have a whim. And these big corporations and all, and I agree with the mom and pop, that's kind of something we would look at, and codes and all. But these big developers, they know what they're doing. And you know, it's I just don't think, I think we should go on record that we ought, the third Wednesday of every month is when we meet.
Come when you can.
And
that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be glad to see you. Third Wednesday.
Looking forward to it.
Appreciate it. I think that's important, that if you're volunteering for a planning board, and you're donating your time, that you want to know that when you're off. Mm-hmm. In other words, because if you want to take your wife, go out of town, you're buying the tickets up front, you don't want to have a special board that have to cancel that, hey, we can't attend because we bought our tickets 2 months ago. So
sure.
I'm empathetic that when people donate their time, that they're not having to sit there every Wednesday to say, oh, we're going to have a special thing here. I think, if you got so busy, if you're starting at 5:30 and you're going to 10:30 at night, I believe it's at that point, I think two meetings make more sense because it's easier on the board.
Sure. But we can cross that if we get there.
When we get to that.
We get a string of months where we're
going. Wouldn't it be great to have that problem?
That's easy to remedy at that point. If month after month after month we're here till 10 o'clock and people say, hey, this isn't working, then we can address it at that point. So
address what? The 2 month later?
Yeah. At that point in time. If we get tired of work until 10 o'clock or something, as an example.
If it's workload related, it's different than...
I just need this special reception.
Yeah. I think that's... Everybody's loud and clear on that, so that's appreciate it. So,
do we need a motion?
Anything else before we adjourn? Thanks for your time.
Motion to adjourn. We all have a motion that we all in agreement to one. We meet on Wednesdays. Planning board meets on Wednesdays.
Well, yeah, that should be brought to the city council that we all agree that that's. I think we should make a motion.
Well, let me tell you though. I mean, y'all can make a motion. I'm sorry, I think if I'm asking the chairman for a special meeting, the way the ordinance is, the chairman can call a special meeting when he wants to. Okay. That's the chairman's discretion to call a special meeting. I'm contacting the chairman and say, hey, can you call a special meeting for this? And I'll give Mr. Beebe the reasoning. And if Mr. Beebe says, no, we're not going to call a special, that's his discretion. I mean, that's the chairman calling a special meeting.
I think Mr. Beebe or whoever it is in the chair.
I think Mike has a sense of the board.
Absolutely.
I heard you loud and clear. I don't see the point.
I don't see any need to scratch that because there will be an urgency, genuine need, but I think the perception is.
You may actually have to call
someone. You might have to. Someone might have to.
Yes, right now, just to tell you.
No, I agree, Glenn.
You know, every time, and then we come to an empty room.
That's the way the code's written.
Yeah. I mean, it's not staff's fault.
No, we'll leave it at that.
But we're just letting them rule us.
Motion to adjourn?
Aye, second.
Second, all in favor? Yeah.